Fantastic Men, Animals with Attitude, and all the fun of the fair. We'll be hearing from the mind behind the latest Marvelous magazine devoted to dogs, get a guided tour of one of our favourite fashion titles, and head to Montevideo for some literary sustenance, LATAM style. A feast for magazine aficionados and canine connoisseurs alike, ahead today on The Stack. You're listening to The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis here on Monocle 24. Today, I'll be joined by Julian Victoria, editor of Dog Magazine, which is, as you might expect, all about man's best friend. We'll also be hearing from Fantastic Man's Kit Yonkers about their great new issue, and we'll hear why the Buenos Aires Literature Festival has a new outpost in Montevideo. That is all coming up here on The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Hello and welcome to The Stack, and a warm welcome in particular to my guest today, Julian Victoria from Dog Magazine. Now, Julian, keen-eared listeners to the show will know that we mentioned it, I think, a couple of weeks ago when Tyler was hosting The Stack. He was a fan, and it's easy to see why. I've been having a browse through as well, and I was saying just while you were taking a seat, if you're a fan of dogs and you're a fan of magazines, a dog magazine is kind of guaranteed that it's going to be fun. But even, you know, even given that, there's something that's a real delight about it. In particular, for me, it jumps straight off the newsstand. There's a beautiful, look at this guy. Is it a guy or is it a...
Is it a boy? Yes.
Is it a boy?
It's a boy, yes. A
very, very, I don't know, very kind of kindly eyed hound features on the cover. Tell me a little bit about that process before we get into the whole background to the start of the magazine.
Well, the cover was actually kind of tricky to shoot because actually this breed is very rare to find outside the Netherlands. So I think that was the first thing that we did for the magazine, just try to get a cover. So we actually emailed the association of the breed in the UK, and literally the lady was so friendly, and she was like, well, we don't have many of those dogs in the UK, but there's like few of them that can actually want to be part of it. And we emailed a few people, and you know, people came over, and we found this one, and they came actually to our office. He came on a Saturday, and we literally transformed our office into a studio. But he was very, very hyper. You know, he was.
Oh, it's funny because he looks, as I said,
exactly.
He looks so sort of sober, and
it was literally we were sweating. Actually took two sessions to do it. The first time that we did it, it didn't work out because he was too hyper. And the second time that we did it, I wanted to do it myself because I kind of know exactly how to work with dogs in terms of, you know, photo shoots.
What you wanted, right. Exactly. And what was that? So how come you were so sure about this? Yeah, as you said, it's a less well-known breed. Why did you just feel this is going to announce Dog Magazine to the world? Why were you so sure?
Actually, I was going to go for my... I have four dogs.
Okay. This is good. What have you got? Just so we're clear.
I got three
clear.
Lakeland Terriers.
Okay.
They're from the Lake District here in the UK. And my fourth one is an adopted one, which is a mixture of weird breeds.
Okay.
He's actually in the magazine.
The classic mongrel.
Exactly. He's in the magazine somewhere. So I kind of wanted to do in the beginning, I was like, let's go and do a simple. Let's take my dogs because they're really kind of rare. There are not many around. So I was going to go for that. And then one of our designers actually went through his Instagram and I noticed there was a dog, and he's actually Dutch. So I went through his Instagram and I noticed a dog that he had. So I was like, oh, I love your border collie. He was like, oh, no, it's not a border collie. That's something different. So I had to Google it and I was fascinated by it. The story behind it, I didn't know what it was. So I kind of wanted to find a little bit more about it. And I think that's what we decided. We said, let's do this together. Let's find about what this is dog about. And let's document it and put it in a magazine.
And I guess we're now getting into the background to doing the magazine at all, which is there's a fascination amongst kind of doggy people with the breeds. What are the stories?
Exactly.
What builds up these amazing characters? Because, you know, there's so much complexity behind a dog's eyes. But tell us more. You're obviously a fan. You're a dog owner. You're obviously passionate about it. There are a couple of dog mags out there. We've had people from Four and Sons, for example,
which
on the stack before, which is amazing.
Why
were you so certain that the time was now for you and your dog magazine? What prompted you to sort of take the leap?
I think, like, you know, independent magazine, the whole movement has been catering for all those people who had a need for something. You can be a vegetarian who likes bungee jumping, and you probably find a magazine that is...
I think I've read that one.
Exactly. You know, like, you will find something like that. And as a dog owner, I kind of wanted to find a magazine that kind of reflects who I am in terms of, you know.
So it's a very personal.
It's a very personal one. And I'm trying to take myself away from it, but my name is basically everywhere.
Which that's good. It needs to be very hands-on. If you want to launch a magazine that does well.
Exactly.
It needs to be very, very
hands-on.
That's
what I think would work.
And tell me a bit about the process, because obviously we talk to a lot of indie magazine people, whether it's publishers or people who are distributing magazines. And I'm always fascinated by the ease with which you get from the idea stage, because these things always sound like a good idea when you've had a few glasses of wine.
Exactly.
So then having this beautiful thing on a newsstand, how was it for you and your team? Did it actually, presumably it wasn't easy, but was it a relatively smooth process? What were some of the main challenges?
I think we were so lucky that I found Peter that had a dog. And I think from there, we always wanted it a dog breed. And we always thought that if we pick a very interesting dog breed, we can actually branch it out and just kind of like talk about where it comes from. A little bit about the story, if it's for a specific area, maybe we can just go there and explore the area and see what it is about. So our main thing was to pick a dog breed. And then early in the process, we found this dog and it was just basically magic from there. We decided to go there and find out what this is about. And I was very scared when we went there because it was so hard to find a dog here in the UK to photograph. And I was like, maybe we go there and there's nothing. And the moment that we actually crossed the border, they were everywhere. I mean, people walking them, and we actually stopped in the middle and just take pictures because we thought that we were not going to find another one. So it was, the whole experience was amazing. So then when we were there, we found, you know, we went to different areas of Friesland. We found different characters. We went to dog walks because I took my dogs with me. And, you know, we actually experienced the whole culture thing. You know, that's why we have a story about the language, because it was something that I wasn't expecting, that they actually speak a different language there.
And do you think this is one of the objectives, I guess, of the magazine? And we'll see, you know, as it continues it in its twice yearly lifespan, to maybe try and explain why you get those regional differences. Like, you know, clearly, if there's a dog that's very popular in one area and not another, often it's because of the work they've done or some history. But it can be something more complex, can't it? It can be about how much a dog, I guess, kind of taps into aspects of national character.
Exactly. Sort of
thing. Is that very much going to be the journey that we go on with, with Dog Magazine?
I think we want to do that. Going back to this dog, we kind of knew what we wanted to do in terms of picking a dog and going from that. But then we actually invite a lot of people to write for us. And the question was, what do you want us to write about? You know, we know we're going to talk about dogs, but what is the subject that we're going to talk about?
How did you answer that
question? Well, easily was the name of the dog translates to English to stand by. So if you translate, you know, stay by or standing by, you kind of relate that to loyalty and fidelity or companionship. So we decided to use that name for a main topic. So everyone who was actually wanting to write for us, we were like, okay, why about companionship or loyalty?
Well, we'll be talking more with Julian Victoria, and we'll hear about his stack of magazines. He's brought in some magazines, who knows, which have maybe helped to inspire.
Exactly.
Or maybe some magazines he doesn't like. Who knows what's in the stack? We'll find out more later in the programme. Time now to speak to the editor of one of the most cherished publications, regularly features here on The Stack, the biannual men's publication, Fantastic Man, cleverly and elegantly edited since 2005 by Geert Jonkers and Jop van Bennekom. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Geert about their latest issue, and in particular to focus in on a new segment in the magazine called Questionnaire, an insight into men's wardrobes.
I have a copy of the latest issue. It looks wonderful as usual. But the cover, there's a tiny bit different. I mean, of course, the cover is the designer Dema Gazalia. But, you know, he's smoking, he's wearing a cap. It's not like the traditional portrait as well.
Well, traditions are always there to be broken in a way, right? We like this image for the cover. And it was funny, only later we realized that putting somebody smoking on the cover is quite, well, controversial. I don't know, is it controversial?
Well, these days, yeah.
These days it is. Yeah, I mean, he's smoking, there's red smoke coming out of his mouth, so it's kind of weird anyway. It's not meant to be a political statement, you know. I mean, yes, I was reading this morning, this whole, well, as people may or may not know, I live in Amsterdam and I read Dutch newspapers, and there's this huge backlash against alcohol in the Netherlands this week because some book came out, and literally all the time they say, you know, drinking is the new smoking, in the sense that, you know, in 20 years' time, it'll be very weird if you drink. You know, people will look at you thinking, you're drinking? God, I mean, you're not supposed to drink. You know, I mean, imagine. But, you know, smoking went the same way from being standing on the table sort of at parties, sort of cigarettes for everybody, to this kind of like complete no-no thing to do.
Here on the Stack, when we do magazine review, Fantastic Man, I mean, I would say more than half of our guests, they bring Fantastic Man and they all, you know, they all love it. What's the enduring appeal? I mean, because how long has it been going?
Well, it's been 11 years now.
We're consistent.
We're heading into our 12th year. I mean,
do you have a secret? I know it sounds like a stupid question, but do you have one tip?
No, I mean, I honestly have no idea. I mean, I think we're very happy and fortunate that there is an enduring appeal to it. And I can only say what we do is do our best and never linger on something too long. If something is a success, that doesn't mean you have to repeat it 17 times. And I think we're pushing ourselves all the time. We've always, from the very beginning, we've aimed to do something very good. But I guess other people do that as well. So that's not really a reasonable explanation. I mean, Jop, my colleague in the magazine, and I, we're Dutch. And I think it is a bit of a Dutch point of view to just do your best. You know, we're not very good at giving other people compliments because in our sort of, you know, the way we were brought up and in the Dutch culture, it's just like, you know, what you do is do your best, you know, and sort of, and we'll give you a sign when you're not doing your best, but otherwise that's what you do.
You have a new segment on the magazine and also on your website. It's a questionnaire about what men dress, but I think it's fascinating because here you're getting insight of someone, how do they organize their wardrobe, if they have a uniform. And those are kind of, I wouldn't say, you know, the common man, but he's not like your usual celebrity, you know, David Gandhi or whatever. You have some interesting characters here, for example, Edwin Dorley. He's an assistive technology teacher in Manchester, for example, and he's giving like his tips for his wardrobe. Tell me about this idea.
I love the whole idea of a kind of a nerdy anthropological interest in somebody's details. And we've always made Fantastic Man because we're interested in clothes. You know, I don't think it's a fashion magazine because it's a magazine that's interested in people's appearance. That can be the books that they publish or the films that they make, but also the way that they dress themselves. And this whole idea of your wardrobe is something fascinating that I think isn't spoken about very often.
No.
You know, there's so many media, so many magazines are trying to tell us what to wear or what not to wear, or they're showing the latest looks from whatever runway they've taken it from. But it's never really about the clothes or the sort of the details of clothes. And, you know, it's also not something that you learn from your parents, sort of how to maintain your wardrobe. What do you do? How do you organize your shirts? How do you pick your things? And so... We've started sending out these questionnaires to a lot of people we know or don't know. And it's fascinating the things they come back with. Some people say, oh, I have a very strict one-in, one-out policy, that whenever I am about to buy something in a store, I really have to sort of think like, okay, what needs to go then? And it's sort of for him the way to not just shop randomly. I think that's the main charm to me, is that what comes out of these questionnaires is the sort of like the detail that people put into their clothing choices and the sort of consideration. I mean, I would love if people would be more considerate about their shopping behavior and about the way they buy, because, you know, I mean, if there would be a way to kill fast fashion, I think we should. I have nothing against things being a bargain, and if people find something good in the high street, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think it's nice to have conversations with people about, okay, why do you buy this and why do you like it and what are the exact details of the flip-flops or the cargo pants or the double-breasted blazer? What do you look for? Because, I mean, you learn from these people. That's what I...
Maybe connects with the I love the honesty of this question. Do you have a pickup look?
But yeah,
because I think, you know, when people dress up, I mean, they want to transmit something to the world, you know, you know, either, you know, to pick up someone or just saying, hey, I'm a rocker or whatever you are, in a way, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people have dramatic pickup looks, don't they?
Yes. And what's garment is your key, is key for your wardrobe, for example? Now, I'm doing the questionnaire to you.
I mean, I have a fascination for Henley shirts that I actually don't wear that often, I must say, but I do have quite a lot of them. I think the whole questionnaire idea comes back to my fascination or interest in the the concept of fetish. I think people can be so specific about clothes, you know. Like, for instance, I'm interested in Henley shirts, but I don't like polo shirts. And the only difference is just a tiny bit of fabric that makes the collar. Why? I don't know. I mean, I literally don't have an explanation for it.
And I think this connects with another thing of Fantastic Men that I always like. Even your fashion shoots, I mean, they can be fairly cheeky sometimes. And you know, they play with a little bit of fetish and, you know, sexiness. For example, I have this photo shoot about a man's buttocks. I mean, it's called Rear. I mean, it is a beautiful photo shoot, and he's very cheeky, he's a very Fantastic Man.
Yeah, and it, you know, because we, you know, I mean, it's interesting to look at somebody's bum, but it's also a very wardrobe-y thing. I mean, I think I know so many people that are looking for good-fitting pants.
And it's, of course, so hard to find.
It's very hard to find, but sometimes you all of a sudden find a brand that seems to be made for you. I think that's... you know, that's what you always hope for. You know, we always hope to, in a way, we always hope to find our own uniform. We hope to find security. We hope to find security in clothes. And you hope to find a pair of trousers that fit you well instead of somebody saying, like, that doesn't look good on the back. You
know? What's your go-to brand when it comes to trousers? Sorry, I'm curious myself.
Actually, my go-to brand is Kors these days. I buy a lot from them.
And finally, I just want to, you know, besides Fantastic Man, you guys, of course, you have also other magazines in your Imperio. What's the new projects for you?
I mean, apart from just making the things better that we do right now or just keep them good, you know, we've all just come back from summer holidays and some time off, and we just need to make new magazines that people will hopefully pick up enthusiastically next year.
That was Gert Jonkers, editor of Fantastic Man, talking to The Stack's own Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Next, we head to one of Latin America's most important literature festivals and book fairs, the Buenos Aires Literature Festival. As with many of the best and brightest trade fairs, this one also now boasts a second iteration. The latest one kicked off this year in Montevideo. Daphne Denis sat down with the Uruguayan organiser of the event, the publisher Alejandro Lagazeta, to discuss how this great event came to travel to neighbouring shores.
Argentines don't usually make it to Uruguay before the South American summer, when they can enjoy its sandy beaches and endless parties. That's one of the reasons why having the Buenos Aires International Literature Festival crossover to the little country when the spring has only just begun is a surprising feat. The event has hopped over the Rio de la Plata, thanks to the strong bond between booksellers and publishers in both countries, Alejandro Lagazeta tells me. He's organized the festival in Uruguay for the past 3 years.
Particularmente tengo una librería que se llama La Lupa Libros.
I own a bookshop called La Lupa and a publishing company. Both had very strong links with the Argentine bookseller and publisher called Eterna Cadencia. They're co-organizers of the Buenos Aires Festival, and we always had commercial links. We sold each other books. We did book readings here and there. They started doing the festival when they decided to cross borders, go to other countries. We said we were interested.
There's a give and take element to the cross-border relationship. Because of restrictions on imports of books printed abroad imposed by the former leftist government of Argentina, booksellers from that country have struggled in recent years to get new titles as fast as their Uruguayan colleagues. The collaboration makes both countries more attractive from an international perspective. This year in Uruguay, the main guest was Scotsman and Trainspotting author Irvin Welsh. Other international novelists came from Spain, Portugal and France, including a rather niche literary group, French Oulipo writers who use constrained writing techniques.
I think that the festival exists for Uruguayan readers to meet authors like Irvin Welsh, who'd never come to Uruguay before. Or 10 or 12 Oulipo writers. Uruguay isn't an interesting place for famous authors. If they come, it's because they have to have some link to Uruguayan writers like Félix Berto or Onetti. So for me, this festival is about connecting people, having international authors blend in with national authors, and to reboost the literary discussion in Uruguay.
Above all, the festival on both sides of the Rio de la Plata seeks to transcend the book as an object, breathing life, dance, performance and music into literature. For Alejandro, a book festival isn't a book fair. It's not about selling books, but rather about finding new ways to think about the written word.
I've been speaking about the idea of a festival as a series of going out plans. For instance, the best plan we offered was come see Irvine Welsh discuss his work, then stay a bit longer and you'll see poets reciting their work. Then right after, there's a contemporary dance solo performed by a 70-year-old artist. Stay a bit longer, and you have a concert of Martin Buscaglia, who's an important musician in Uruguay. And then you have a party at 10 p.m. People stayed from 6 to 10 p.m. and it was the perfect plan. For me, it was the high point of the festival.
By bringing the Buenos Aires literary scene over to Uruguay, the festival succeeds to create an increasingly multicultural conversation on literature, one that goes beyond this little country in the Southern Cone. For Monocle 24, I'm Daphne Duny.
That was Alejandro Lagazeta speaking to Daphne Duny in Montevideo. This is The Stack on Monocle 24. Still with me here in Studio One, Julian Victoria. He's the editor of Dog Magazine. Not much time left in the show, Julian, but I do want to leaf through some of the magazines you've brought in. Now, tell me, what you've brought in, I think, what, three or four titles?
Three titles, exactly.
And we'll learn about them as you tell us. Are these magazines that inspire you? Are they things that you just enjoy reading? Do you have magazines that you always go back to? Or is it about, do you say, look, I want to be surprised by the newsstand, and then I'll go where that takes
you know,
me.
I think you have to be loyal to the independent magazines that made this movement. You know, the Serial magazine, for example, this is a must to have every issue. So I have subscriptions for those magazines. But it's always nice to go back to the stores and actually find what is new there. And I was delivering some copies to one of the stores here in London, and I picked some magazines that I haven't seen before, just because it attracted me in terms of the design of it. I don't know what they were
about.
And
that will literally just be
exactly
a cover, just
exactly.
Whether it grabs you or not. Right.
That's what I'm very attracted to colors and to graphic design.
Well, I can see that from a couple
exactly,
of your
yeah,
selections
exactly.
here. Yeah.
So there's
Let's
one,
talk maybe about the first one. What have you got here?
This one actually is a new little magazine from Scotland. And I picked it up because of the colours. I think they were very...
Oh, that's right. I think we've mentioned this previously on The Stack, Vanguards, which is, I mean, yeah, it's a smaller format. I mean, can you describe the colour?
It's very colourful. Yeah. It's like a screen print. Almost. And I was very attracted to it. It's like a pattern that you can actually use it in anything. So I was very fascinated with that. I was like, you know what, I'm going to take it and see what it is about. And I discovered it's a very local, you know, little magazine from Scotland. And they just talk about local products and the story behind it, which is always
and it's
fascinating.
It's a great example, isn't it, Julian, of you have these magazines where, okay, it's quite slight, it's quite small format, but they've got so much, you know, great design, there's so much thought going into it. And now, I guess what would have been maybe kind of cottage titles almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Little small things. Now, you know, they've got such great production value because
exactly.
they've got really, really great people putting
exactly,
their minds
yeah.
together to make them.
There's a really cool illustration there too, which I really, really enjoy. So I saw it and I was like, I need to get it, which is very, really, really cool. So
Let's move on. Another title, I don't know, it's not featured for a while on The Stack, but it's been mentioned before, I think. Tell us about this one.
I'm obsessed with stationery and notebooks. So when I saw
you're
it,
you're in good company here at Midori House.
Exactly. So, I'm obsessed with it. And I picked this. I was like, it looks like a book that I will actually buy. And I saw it and I was like, I like the colors. I like the texture of it. And when you open it, there's so many patterns and different things that you know that I very enjoy. You know, the photographer is good. The layout is good. There are some recipes. It's a family kind of magazine that I would normally not pick, but I picked it up because it was very, very colorful and very inspirational.
Exactly. And this is a lunch lady, food plus family.
Exactly.
On the front.
Yeah,
and we've got a kind of an ice cream, you know, pinks and yellow and block blue. So it definitely designed to catch the eye.
Exactly.
And a real mix. And I guess it's showing how particularly in that kind of foodie scene,
yeah,
that in the independent sector, it's moved on so much. There's every nuance there. We were talking to David Lane just a couple of weeks ago. You don't just do recipes. There's all sorts of nuance, and this is a really colourful and fresh take, isn't it?
What I like about magazines like that one is inspirational. Like, I can actually go through it and pick something that I would probably use in my in our next issue, for example. Mm. You know, is
what about the recipes? Did you give those a bash? Are you a cooking type?
No, we were supposed to write a story about a croquette, which is a Dutch little meaty thing, but we didn't have space for it, and I was so upset about it. But
I can't remember. Is there any doggy recipes in here?
No, because we don't want to go that way.
You don't want to go that
way. We don't want to.
I don't know. Because the odd one in there a little bit.
No, we were just we're trying to cater the dog owner and a dog lover. I think.
True.
You know, you want to kind
of share your dinner with your dog. That's one of the great pleasures, isn't it?
Well, you don't have to tell anyone, but yeah, so you just pass the little meat under the table. Yeah, which is good.
Julian, where next? What's this one? Tell us about
this. This one is actually A City Made by People, which I think is the first issue. And I picked this up actually, and we were in Amsterdam. And I love this because we like storytelling. And this magazine, for example, is stories about people who live in those cities, and they tell these amazing stories and kind of want you to, make you visit those cities. So I find
it's a very kind of, I don't know how to describe it, it's kind of almost that classic indie look. We've got
we've got the
white frame, a nice big image, carefully selected typography, quite sort of restrained, quite understated look.
Yeah.
But no bad thing for that. And tell us, I mean, you mentioned about storytelling. Sometimes people maybe miss that point, don't they? They drift away. Yeah. The stories are what makes it, whether you're talking about cities people live in or the dogs that
they're there. I think people want to relate to something, and I think storytelling is so personal, and the people want to read something that they might actually experience before, and there's someone else who has experienced that.
So let's look to the future. You've already mentioned that there's a few ideas rolling around in your head for where Dog Magazine might be going next. On that point about selling dogs and dog ownership, do you think that if people read Dog Magazine, I mean, chances are they might be dog owners already.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Do you think it will convert people? If you were a dog skeptic, or maybe you're a cat person, whisper it quietly. Is there enough in Dog Magazine, I don't know, to win people around?
I think so. I think there are stories for everyone. I think it's not all about dogs, but, there's stories about, language, for example, or, other things that you don't really need to have a dog or love dogs. But I think we're trying to find a platform where people can enjoy a good read, a good story.
Exactly.
It's what trying,
and if it's a four-legged friend that sort of guides you in one direction or another, what's not to enjoy? Julian, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us. Great to talk to you about Dog Magazine. Can I make a small request for the next time you come in?
Yeah.
Because you're invited back.
Thank you. I live around the corner, so I will.
It's pretty easy. Could your canine friends not join us?
Oh my God, they will love it.
In Studio One?
I will bring them. I will bring them.
All of them?
Yeah, of course.
Four. It could be a bit...
Yeah.
It'll be a busy episode of the Stack.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll be good.
I'll prepare in advance. I'll make sure we've got some doggy treats in.
Perfect.
It's wonderful stuff. That's Julian Victoria. He's the editor of the beautiful Dog Magazine, which is out now in all good newsstands that you can find. Julian, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. And that is all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to Julian, to our producers, Ben Rylan and Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and of course to our editor, Claire Urban. Usual form, your comments or queries are welcome. Drop us a note at info@monocle.com, and don't forget to join us at the same time next Saturday. You can listen again, you can catch up in the meantime and find out more at monocle.com via iTunes or on your preferred platform. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for listening.